It takes a certain type of person to travel thousands of miles to a country they've never been before, where the folks speak a language they don't speak, to compete in what's regarded as one of the most rugged and intense races in the world. Well, Sealy Lake's Curtis Freed happens to be that type of person. Last November, the Kurtz Polaris owner competed in the Baja 1000, a competitive and grueling off-road race with a distance of over 1,200 miles through Mexico's Baja Desert, and needless to say, he has a few stories to tell. This episode of the Voices of Montana podcast features Curtis and his brother Bruce Freedy, who helped on his support crew, to talk about their experience competing in Mexico, their ultimate takeaways from it, and what exactly it takes to successfully compete in the Baja 1000 to anyone else looking to try it. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Tom here in this edition of the Voices of Montana podcast.
Curtis, by the way, good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you spending some time to relay this story. Is it still like a dream to you?
It's been such a busy winter and so many things happening in the world that it's starting to be a memory. It's a good memory, but, there's been many times this winter, it's like, boy, I wished I was somewhere else and sitting in my razor going somewhere, but, it's a memory. It's a darn good memory. I don't have to do it again, though.
Well, were you one of those guys who, when you got done, you went, woo, or like, what did I do that for? I mean, that was crazy.
I think it was all of the above. Number yeah. one, I had to wait a little bit just to think, wow, I just finished this 1,225-mile race. I can't believe it's done, you know?
Well, you did it in 38 hours, too. That's the crazy. And you did it by yourself for 38 hours. Let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Had this been on the back of your mind before a guy named Clay had approached you?
No, I've always thought of the Baja 1000. I always thought, man, that would be fun to go watch and see because of the trophy trucks and how much air and how fast they go and the stuff they do. And, you know, literally going through the desert through 3-foot moguls at 110 mile an hour plus is like, you know, that's an adrenaline rush for me. So, I would have loved to have felt what that would be like. And I was down racing the King of Hammers, a year ago last month. And in Southern California, which is a very grueling, grueling off-road race in the United States. And the guy that does all the GPS trackers and everything, so everybody has the information of where they're at on the track and so that they can't cheat and take a shortcut. And if they need help, they can push a button and it sends a signal with a pin drop of their location and all kinds of stuff. And he's putting them all in and he's looking at my machine. He's going, hey, this is an RS1. He says, I've got this crazy idea where I'd like to put a couple of guys together and race the Baja 1000 in RS1s. And he said, would you like to do it? And I was like, well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to do it. It'd be an unbelievable thing to do. And lo and behold, literally, 7-8 months later, I'm in Mexico.
Well, and you, what is this, this RS1, this you call the Razor?
Well, it is it's a machine made by Polaris that is a single seat Razor, designed for only one person, and it's the same width as the Razor, and it's the same length as the Razor. It's just totally redone, so it's got a little dinky cockpit where one person can sit in it.
Made it seems like for races like this.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was for, and that's what we did with it. So.
Okay, so how long did you toy with the idea, Curtis, of being a part of this group and taking on this Baja 1000? And then who talked you into it and who didn't talk you out of it?
Well, you know, I told him that I'd loved the idea, and they started working with a whole bunch of different people, and there were six of us that he got to say yes. And I kept telling him, I'm 95% there, but there's so many things that are in my world that are going on that I just can't commit to anything because I'm unsure of the future of what's going on and getting product and trying to keep the stores moving and going and et cetera. So,
yeah.
So my wife was kind of like, you really don't need to go do this. It's Mexico, you know? And, I says, well, I couldn't agree with you more, but on the other hand, you know how I love adrenaline rushes. And anyways, literally 7 weeks before the race, I finally told myself, I said, you know what? I got to start moving towards doing this, because even if I don't, I'm wasting a little time and some money. But on the other hand, if I don't get started now, I'm not going to be able to get there. And finally, I convinced myself it doesn't really matter. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance. I'll never be able to go do this again with the resources and with the stuff that we have now, because I've never been to Mexico in a vehicle. So I didn't know diddly squat about nothing. And I didn't know a whole lot of people that had done this or had gone down to the race. But I had six other guys that were going to go with us as a group, and I was like, this is the time to do it if you're going to do it, because you have a little bit of support and a little bit of help. And so 5 weeks before the race, I took off to go visit a couple friends of mine to build a complete custom roll cage on my Razor in Hurricane Utah. And we went down there and spent 24 hours and got this roll cage built, and we come home and I painted it and literally worked endless amounts of hours for the next 4 weeks and got my car completed. And I went and took it into Missoula to a good friend of mine, Tom, and we went and started playing with shocks, because you got to have absolutely a phenomenal shock package.
Yeah.
To make sure this works proper, because you're going to put it through more hell than any human being could possibly imagine. And so we spent a day working on shocks, and we got all done, and Tom was sitting there through all these moguls and ruts, and he's going, man, it looks good. And he said, what are you thinking? I says, it might be the best handling machine I've ever been in my life. I'm really comfortable with it. And so I said, you know what? I don't want to abuse this thing anymore. I think it's time that I get ready to load up and start heading to Mexico.
And you had a thought about some of your competitors, or some folks who were in your group as well. They were tinkering with their vehicles all the way up to the last minute. But you said, hey, this is ready to go. And talk about that.
We're down in Mexico, and they're trying to get me to go for a night ride and to go adjust lights and do all kinds of stuff. And they were saying, you only got two Baja lights on the front of your rig. That is not enough lights. And I said, no. It's enough lights. And they said, well, boy, you aren't going to be able to see that much. And I said, if I can see too much, I may overdrive the car at night and I could wreck. And my goal is not to wreck. My goal is to finish this race. And I'm not going on a night ride someplace that I've never even seen before. Don't even know the first thing about where we're at or what we're doing out here in the middle of the hills. And I don't want to take a chance on hurting it. And I'm pretty sure that my car right now has 30 miles on it from when I finished it, and I am very comfortable that my car can finish 1,300 or 1,400 miles in one sitting if I don't abuse it. So if I go out and ride, that it keeps taking miles off of it, and I may break before the finish, and so I don't want to do it. And it was kind of funny when it was all said and done, because the night before we got ready to go, these guys are like, Curtis, you just don't seem to be engaged in this whole ordeal, You're finishing up a lot of things at the last minute, and it seems like you're doing things differently and et cetera. And I said, yep, but I says, I'm doing my plan, and I'm going to not alter from my plan. And I don't even know if it's the right plan, but it's my plan, and I'm going to go with it. And after the race is over with, they come up to me and they said, you know, we thought you were the most unprepared, and you were the person that had the best plan. And you implemented it, and you didn't vary from it, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's cool, because there were 300 racers from all across the country or thereabouts, and you've got motorcycles, and you talked about those big trucks, and I can't imagine, you know, when you said, and Curtis Freedy is with us, by the way. He's the owner of Kurt's Polaris in Steely Lake. That's been there for a long time. His brother, Bruce Freedy, who was on part of that crew, will join us here in just a little bit to talk more about that, and we'll also catch up to date on some winter recreation there. But yeah, 300 racers, you were one of only 187 to have completed this race. I'm curious about, you know, what was in your mind, what you thought was going to happen, and what actually did happen out there 38 hours as an Ironman on your own.
Well, when I started the race, I kept telling myself, just, you know, there's all kinds of speed zones that you can only go a certain speed. And I knew there was something to the fact that if you went over that speed, because you had this this a tracking device in your vehicle that the racing company would put in there. And if you went over that speed limit, you would get ding time added to your whole thing. And so I was kind of trying to concentrate in the very beginning. You don't get to just, you know, you got to run like 15 miles at 67 kilometers. That's as fast as you can go, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm concentrating on doing that and et cetera. And all of a sudden you start to go off road and you're in, now it's dusty and there's vehicles and there's literally, when I tell you there's hundreds of thousands of people, I'm telling you there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people lined up for 1,200 miles. There might be a million people lined up over that 1,200 miles waiting for people to come through their areas, and there's all kinds of jumps and there's all kinds of things where they dig booby traps and different things. And so if they're really waving you on, that means that you either got to hit this jump and clear, or if you don't, there could be something on the backside that could cause you to wreck. And so I started seeing all this, and I started seeing all the people and everybody doing their things, and they're trying to stand out there and slap the car as you're going by. And right now there's no speed limits, okay? So I mean, you can go as fast as you want, right? And I'm nervous, and I'm like, man, I don't want to hit somebody here, and I don't want to cause a wreck, and I want to finish this thing, so I got to be cautious. And when I got through the first 150 miles to the next checkpoint, I was like, okay, that's one checkpoint down, and now I just got to start settling down and don't overdrive the car and et cetera. And I just kept going and going and going, and I took a piece of tape and I taped it up to the roof of the car so I could look up there and see at what miles my checkpoints were at, so I always knew where I was at in the process of it. And I just started clicking them off, and what's weird is I look back on it and I look at that piece of tape still sitting there, and I don't remember probably four or five of those checkpoints. I don't even remember where I was at, what the conditions were, or a darn thing, because you're just driving and you're going. And sometimes my brother and my pit crew couldn't even find the pit stops where we were at. So I was like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and get my gas that I've prepaid for to be there. And I'm just going to grab the gas, and I'm going to get some more water, and I'm just going to keep going, and maybe they can catch me at the next one, because
all right,
we're talking Mexico. There's not a lot of communication.
Yeah, stand by, Curtis. We got more of this story to come here on Voices.
Why? Just think about it. Why is the number one selling brand of chainsaws not sold at Lowe's or the Home Depot? We can give you over 10,000 reasons. That's how many authorized local steel dealers you can find across the country. Visit one, and you'll find a range of dependable gas and battery-powered tools, from trimmers to blowers. And you'll find service from experienced professionals. Real Steel. Find yours at steelusa.com. Lowe's and Home Depot are trademarks of their respective companies.
Talk Winter Recreation here in just a little bit. Got a couple of guys who know a little bit about that. Bruce Freedy will join us shortly. He is with the snow. Oh, where did I put that? The Snowdrift Rider Club. There it is. The Drift Riders Snowmobile Club out of the Cedar Lake area. They got some cool things going on. Bruce is also Curtis Freedy's brother and was part of that crew where Curtis drove this Baja 1000 in November. And Curtis, the owner of Kurtz Polaris in Cedar Lake, has been there a long time. And Curtis, I appreciate you telling the story. For me, some of the one thing that stood out is you talk about a shock package. I can't even imagine a shock package that is going to handle those moguls at 100 miles an hour. What's the technology behind that?
You know, it's just getting somebody that understands shocks, and they can watch and see the vehicle run through these things, and they make adjustments to the shocks to do it. It's all valving. It's all air pressure. It's all spring tension. It's a talented individual that can put shocks together to make the vehicle withstand the punishment and keep the car in control at moguls at speed.
I can't imagine it. It was probably a pretty bumpy ride for you too. How fast do you think you averaged?
Well, my average speed was probably, believe it or not, only around 36 mile an hour. Because sometimes you had long distances where you couldn't go fast because of a speed limit. And I shouldn't say long, but, you know, a mile or two. And sometimes the course was so rough and so brutal that you'd be lucky to do 15 to 20 mile an hour. And sometimes, literally for an hour and a half, you might sit at 80 plus mile an hour.
Wow.
And you're just going.
Did it play out the way that you talked about your plan and that how it was ultimately successful? But did it play out the way in your mind that you thought it was going to?
No, because my plan started out perfect, and after I started racing and I got through a couple of checkpoints, all of a sudden everything changed, because it went from all kinds of stuff to just survival and pay attention and stay awake and be concentrated on and look for the guys behind you, because I've never done an off-road race of this magnitude where the speeds were so much. So I had to change on the go of what I was doing, because I sat there and watched an iPad that was 4 inches above my head of my vision out the front, because that told me where I was supposed to go. And then I'd look in my rearview mirrors, which was left to right, and I'd look for headlights coming behind me, because everybody's having breakdowns and flat tires and doing checkpoints and getting fuel and et cetera. So you got all kinds of vehicles that are faster than you are, and they're trying to make up time, and they really don't care if they hit you to make sure that you move out of the way. it's not a gentleman's sport by no means. And so everything to me changed, because I'm concentrating on making sure I'm on the course, because you can get screwed up real easy. And I'm concentrating on making sure I get the heck out of somebody's way if they're wanting to come through. And I'm also trying to concentrate on listening to the leave nav that was on the iPad that's talking to me in my ear for 1,225 miles of every single obstacle that's on the course that I'm about to get to. So I had somebody talking to me, telling me what's going on the course and what dangers there are in front of me, so I can get prepared for them.
Yeah, the iPad as a navigator. Bruce Freedy joins us as well. Curtis's brother, as I said, he is one of the groomer chairmen, as a matter of fact, for the Cedar Lake Drift Rider Snowmobile Club. But there was no snow here, Bruce. This was all dirt, and this was very rough. Talk about your experience there and helping your brother through this Baja 1000.
Well, it's that whole course. Of course, I was what they call a chase car, so we had navigation inside of the vehicle, so we could watch and see where he was at. We couldn't see where everybody else was at, but we tried to stay lateral to him while we were crossing from the west side of the Baja terrain into the east side back and forth, and that's. That itself is quite a challenge. The highways down there are about 10 feet wide, and it's got a 4 to 8 inch drop off. And we kept watching all those guys with trailers, and their trailers were off of the road, or they were in the middle of the road going down there all the time. So our big thing was to try to get ahead of him, make sure he had fuel, and check for loose bolts or anything that needed tightened up.
So Curtis, when I got to take a break here. I'm going to have you talk about some of your crewmates there as well. Father and son, Craig and Hunter Stansberry, as well as Bruce Freedy. We're talking about this trip, the Baja 1000. It's actually 1,225 miles. And Curtis did it as an Ironman, which is rather unusual. Only about 15% of the riders will take it on all by themselves. Had some help there. We'll come on back after some headlines and get more into this story. But first, here's Brian Bennett.
Opportunity, safety, teamwork. That's what's waiting for you at BNSF Railway. BNSF is hiring track maintenance positions with competitive salary and benefits in 19 cities across Montana and North Dakota. Track maintenance is vital not only to rail safety and reliability, but also the nation's supply chain. We need people like you to keep our network moving efficiently. Visit jobs.bnsf.com to learn more.
Get a sense of how grueling this race is. As I mentioned, 300 entered, 187 finished. Curtis Freedy and Bruce Freedy. Curtis is the one who did the race. Bruce is a brother, and he and father and son Craig and Hunter Stansberry are part of that part of that crew. Some kudos to you, though, Curtis, because there were 14 racers who entered the Pro Stock UTV class, your class there, 9 finished. And then of all the there were 6 people who chose to do this as an Ironman, you're just one of the 6 and just one of 3 who finished it in that regard. Why don't we just start by talking about your crewmates there. Did you feel, because sometimes you raced ahead of them, they couldn't get to the checkpoint in front of you. Did you look around, okay, well, I beat them again, and then just head back out on the trail?
Well, no, because, well, in a sense, yes, but we had radio contact if we were close, and if I couldn't get them, I just made sure I'd get 3 more bottles of water and make sure that they got as much gas in the vehicle as possible. And I would just go, and I'd try to talk to them on the radio, and sooner or later I would pick them up on radio, and I'd just tell them to go to the next checkpoint because I'm already through it. And they could see that I was through it because of the tracking devices.
Bruce, so that was your chore. A big part of your chore was trying to get ahead of your brother, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, you take and watch all of the other chase vehicles, and it's just one big mad dash from checkpoint to checkpoint. And it goes on and on for the whole race. So they're out there, like in Kurt's case, he was out there 38 hours. Well, we were too. And some of those checkpoints were 20 miles off the highway. And I don't even know how they got out there with their stuff. But we would check and we would look and we're going, well, we can't make that one in front of him. So what we would do is we would hang there until we knew he was in there. And then we would try to establish communications and then tell him that we would move on to the next one and make sure that he was taken care of.
What kind of adjustments? You had a collision too, Curtis, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a trophy truck that tried to move me out of the way.
Not very diplomatically, I would presume.
Well, I jumped out of the car as soon as I gathered up my legs, because my legs were numb from sitting for so long that I jumped out. I was on the fight, you know, I was pissed off. And as soon as I seen 2 Mexicans get out of the car and they didn't speak English, I thought best thing I can do is keep my mouth shut and we'll just finish, we'll get us disconnected and get them on their way. And I'll start changing parts and tires and whatever I got to change to get this thing cobbled into the next checkpoint so I can, see if I can get some assistance and get my car fixed and get it going. And that happened to be one of the checkpoints that my brother and my pit crew couldn't get to. So I was irritated, and then I was happy because I had 25 Mexicans at the next checkpoint that were my best friends for a little while because they just wanted to take care of everything. They were so jacked and excited to work on a car. It was crazy. So, and they didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Mexican. And I don't know how we got it all done, but we got it done.
You know, it just sounds like, a little bit of chaos in all of this. But the urgency of it all was get back in that driver's seat, wasn't it?
That's the whole urgency, is get in, because if the car ain't moving, you ain't going anywhere. And the longer I sat in the car, the rummier I got and the more tired I got. And that last checkpoint, 125 miles, I'm telling you what, I don't even think I remember much of the race. I know I don't, that last 125 miles.
Yeah, and that's not unusual, but when you think back on that, you probably scared yourself a little bit. Wow, I can't even remember racing at that. Of course, your diet didn't help, did it?
Well, I told myself I needed to have lots of water, and I there was probably a lot of things that I needed. I had a whole bag of jerky with me, but I never...
Stand by again. My fault, Curtis. Got a breakup coming. We'll talk about that. We'll continue here on Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Just 3 words tell you everything you need to know. They tell you why we employ more than 2,000 workers at our factory in Virginia Beach, and why over 10,000 local steel dealers are putting battery power in the hands of Americans. Just 3 words. Made in America. Real steel.
Find yours at steelusa.com. The majority of steel products sold in America are made in America of U.S. and foreign materials. Batteries and chargers are sourced internationally.
Curtis Freedy killed it at the Baja 1000 and 38 hours, 38 minutes. That's 1,200 miles. He did it Ironman, one of only three in that mode who finished the race. And Bruce Freedy is with us as well, who was part of his crew, went down there and helped. Bruce, I want to hear from you in terms of, you know, we asked Curtis what his vision was heading into it, and then what it actually was when he got out there on the road. There's a lot of surprises for you, huh?
Oh, there were surprises all the time. we were amazed at the grueling part of that right there, how far and how fast those guys would travel through out there by gauging our speed on the highway, where they were actually outrunning us. So that we had to pick up tempo, and then you'd just be driving along, and then all of a sudden, all these chase trucks and stuff would be there. So you'd find a spot, and then you'd pull over and try to gauge when the race drivers were coming in, and then you'd try to take care of them. But it's just chaos. That's really what it was.
Curtis, back to that collision a little bit too, because there was a couple of minor ones there. And I should mention, there's a nice article out of the Sealy Lake, Sealy Swan Pathfinder, that details that, really good storytelling there too. That's where this collision happened. This truck ran into the back of you, didn't care that you were there until they got stuck to you. And then that bent a radius rod. It took off a rear panel there, dented your fuel tank. Was that the major collision? Was that the major piece of work that you had to do on your vehicle to get it through?
Yep, that was basically it right there. I had to change a tire and a wheel and a radius rod and bend a couple of other pieces back so that everything would clear and work good. And that was it. It still took 2 hours, but that was it.
So really, actually, the vehicle turned out, it weathered that pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it took a pretty good hit, but and it still has some damage, and I'm still waiting for some new parts to show up to finish and put it back the way it should be. But nevertheless, it completed the whole race, which was I was thrilled with, because I did a lot of things based on it's got to last. It can't just be fast, or it can't be this, or it can't look cool. It has to last the most grueling race in the world.
Bruce, what was your thoughts as you waited for Curtis to get into a checkpoint, the ones that you could get ahead of? Were you surprised that, hey, he's in good shape, vehicle's in good shape?
Throughout the whole race, when he would pull in, we had a product called Crack Check. And we did all of the suspension stuff with it, anything that could shake loose. You take a flashlight and you'd shine in there and you'd see all of those points. And as long as they were all tight and he wasn't talking about an issue, we concentrated on looking at the tires, making sure he had water and everything. And then once the fueling was done, away he would go. You know, at the very end of that race, when he pulled in, we looked at the whole thing and we thought, you know what? We've seen all of these million-dollar trophy trucks and all this other stuff. Literally, they were carnage when they would come across. Parts were falling off of them. Everything was rough. And if it hadn't been for that collision, we wouldn't have had to put a wrench on that RS1.
Wow.
Other than gas. So, you know, that's, to me, that tells me an awful lot. That means that Kurt knew what he was doing, and it was just us to kind of keep things checked in case we had an issue.
Well, Curtis, then credit to Polaris then too, right?
Oh, yeah. Most definitely, they build a pretty amazing vehicle there. The reason I love that RS1 so much is it's kind of like a Weeble's Wobble. it's all over the place, but it always seems to find its way back to the wheels.
That's the big thing. So, you know, you didn't have a lot to eat, according to this article in the Pathway, some Reese's peanut butter cups, good choice there, some Pop-Tarts, mostly just drinking water over those 38 hours. What was it like when you ended that race? What did you do?
Well, first of all, I just kind of sat there for a minute, couldn't believe that I actually finished it, and then I started thinking, oh my goodness, I put all this time and effort and everything into it, and now it's done, it's over with. What am I, because you hate to see it end because you're having so much fun, but yet on the other hand, I was so thrilled that it was done because I didn't think I could do another hour in that car. It's not a very big cockpit, and it's not a very comfortable place to be. But I made it through there, and then you're locked in with a Hans device and five-point harness and the whole works where you can't move, you can't wiggle, you can't do anything. And I kept worrying about in the later part of the race about getting Charlie horses, and so that's why I kept drinking water and et cetera. But when we finally got out of the car, we got it loaded on the pickup, I accepted my awards, we went and found the house that we had rented, which took us a little while because we're not very used to Mexico.
Right.
And we got there, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And we I literally laid down on the bed, put my head back, and I don't think I wiggled or moved for about 4.5 hours to 5 hours because it was like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, I could hear some noises and people moving around a little bit and et cetera. And I was like, well, it's time to get up. And so I got up and we, had to figure out how to get water because the water was turned off to this building and I desperately needed to shower really, really bad. Anyway, we finally got the water turned on. We, took a shower. We made sure everything was locked down. And I think it was about 11 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock. And we jumped in the pickup, and I told Bruce, I said, it's time to drive nonstop and get the hell out of here and get across the border and get home. So literally, we drove pretty much nonstop all the way back to Mesquite, Nevada from La Paz.
Wow.
So if I didn't get enough driving already, we just pulled another 24-hour drive and made it back there, and or longer than that, it was longer, and it was probably 30 hours, and we got a motel room and went from there. I slept for a total of 5 days there. I think I got a total of 9 hours of sleep in 5 days.
Wow.
And we put on 4,800 miles on my pickup, and I put on 1,300 miles on the RS1 in an 8-day cycle, because from when we left Sealy Lake and we got home to Sealy Lake was 8 days.
Wow. So Bruce, you're next then, huh?
Yeah.
Sure.
I doubt it.
Sure. I'll go for it. Yeah. Curtis, what would you say? Yeah. What would you, I mean, if you would, I think in this article you said probably not doing this again, but what would you help somebody? What if Bruce got that wild, you know what, up his, you know what, and decided I'm going to go do this too. And would you go out there and help him? What would you say to a rider who's interested in this?
I'd encourage him to try it, but I'd really encourage him to think about the whole picture because everything I thought I knew, I didn't know. The only thing that I can truthfully say that I was right on the whole race in any way, shape, or form was that I knew what my car had to be built like in order to finish and last. Other than that, I was wrong on every single thing. Because you don't know until you get there.
Right. Yeah, you can't know. I mean, yeah. No. Hey, I got that.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was gonna conclude and take a break and then come on back because I want to get a few minutes about Winter Wreck there. Okay. And I know you guys are heavily involved in that. As I mentioned, Bruce is the groomer chairman for the Sealy Lake Drift Rider Snowmobile Club. There's some interesting developments there. Of course, Curtis Freedy, he spells it with a C, but it's Kurtz Polaris and Sealy Lake with a K. Been there for his business, been there for 30 plus years. So we'll talk about winter recreation. Let's go from the Baja to the Clearwater after we come on back with more here on Voices.